What happens at the poetry project?
I'm happy to go first if you...
You go first.
Okay. So there's readings. It's what I love about it is that it's really, in New York City, which is always kind of getting more and more expensive and ridiculous by the minute, it's kind of a lo-fi, no-frills, artist-run, poet-run institution that's really small. I'm actually not on staff, I'm just a curator, and I've done both the Wednesday nights and the Friday nights, but it's like readings, and Simone has like a much more official, bigger job. But it's readings, people come to the space for readings, but there's also workshops that people can take classes that are pretty low cost, and it's like not part of an academic institution to take workshops with, and it's a lot of like supporting local and national, a lot of experimental poets, I would say. And the Friday nights are more interdisciplinary, and yeah.
I mean, that's the gist of it. It's, so the project is, this is our 50th year, and it's been housed at St. Mark's Church on the Lower East Side in the East Village for almost that entire time, since 1966. And the programs of the project have grown so that now there are three reading series. There used to be also a talk series, so there are readings on Monday, Wednesday, and Friday nights. Ariel said that they do, when they had done Wednesday and Friday as if that wasn't a big deal, but actually the Wednesday night series of the Poetry Project is one of the longest running series of readings in the country, and kind of everyone comes through at one point or another who's writing, certainly in the United States and sometimes from other places as well. And the Friday nights that Ariel now does are, I think, incredibly important to the future of curating literary events in New York, in that they are interdisciplinary, which I think, you know, is an important part of the future of where people actually coming out for literary events needs to go. And Ariel's also contributed significantly to diversifying the audience of the project, not just in terms of gender, but also in terms of race and the academy. I mean, I think that's also an important thing to add, that the project has been, because it's experimental in its aesthetic and its sort of general outside the mainstream position in the literary world, has become over time increasingly associated with an academic kind of poetry that's not really accessible to the general public, but I think Ariel's done a lot to change that. And when we talk, like, my job is bigger only to the extent that I have responsibility for more programs. So I curate Wednesday night, but I also invite all the people who do workshops. I contribute more generally to the running of the organization.
Thank you. Sounds like a really cool, like, good thing.
Yeah, come. And what's also really amazing about the Poetry Project is that we have volunteers who then, you can do trades, right?
Like, I mean, the volunteers. We do almost anything. I mean, we'll trade anything.
Yeah.
Like, this is the other thing about the project that's cool, that there's no, we are not the state, you know, we can do anything we want within the confines of some of the state funding that we get, some foundation funding. So some of the things we do are restricted by our agreements with our funders. But I mean, I have a student now who I teach at the New School who just expressed an interest in what we were doing and is now an intern there, which means she comes to all the Wednesday night readings for free. If she wanted to take a workshop, she could probably do that for free just because we would make that available. I mean, it's just, it's a real grassroots literary. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's very, I think what's also something really unique about the Poetry Project is that a lot of nonprofit arts organizations, from the way I see it, and like museums, are increasingly run by people who are not practitioners of the thing that they're organizing. And that creates a sort of distance and a professionalization. And that's been one of the like requirements of working at the Poetry Project, is that you have to be a practicing poet, however you interpret that. I love that moment when you were like, actually, these are all about the Poetry Project.
I didn't realize.
It's also a very like Another thing that's different about the Monday and Wednesday and Friday series is that Wednesdays happen every single Wednesday, whereas the Friday night series is every other week, which is a huge, to have a break from the weekly reading is amazing, and it's very labor intensive to be in that space and to be a receptor to a shifting, overlapping communities of people that do come through depending on the readers. It can be very exhausting, disappointing, even when it's like rewarding and there's lots of contact with people. Another really amazing thing about the project that makes it unique that I think about is that we write introductions that are sort of poetic meditations on the work, and a lot of that's very rare, I think, and when work is presented, is that so there is a certain level of study and connection and praise that happens that is, you know, it's non-monetary, even though there is an honorarium also, but that the introduction is like a part of the reading.
Yeah, I think it's important that we show interest in people's work, that we sort of maintain ourselves as, you know, even if there are three people in the room, you know, the curator was interested in what you were doing. And I think that means something to other poets, that people are curious about their work and appreciate it and can read it.
Do you want to ask a question?
Maybe it's a requirement.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, I know.
So you mentioned that you were kind of testing out how to read your poetry. What about you? Like, did you find your way to, I guess?
It's always awkward.
Yeah.
You know? But, yeah, I mean, it's sort of the... I don't think I've read the K. Ryan section out loud, but I have read the Fran Lebowitz section out loud once. And the whole time I was thinking, like, God, why did I choose these sections? I mean, it's a book that... It's hard to choose from, and it's very, like I'm trying to map all of these things that I'm interfacing with, reading or in contact with, and it also happened, all of it, like 5 years ago, so it's hard to connect to it. So I think when actually doing the performance of reading, I'm like thinking, like, what are you all thinking? Like, how is this for you? Like, I actually felt sort of disconnected. Maybe it's just because of everyone always goes towards the back of the room. I used to, when I was first starting to like sort of enter poetry communities and scenes and go to readings, I used to be so confused by people reading from their books, because I'm like, it's done, isn't that boring? And I always thought, like, I made a vow to myself that's totally unrealistic to fulfill with my current work schedule, that I would always read new work at readings, because that would seem more like exciting and on edge. But I've definitely come to have a more like nuanced understanding that like the work comes alive in ways that I don't know about when I read it out loud, and it's unpredictable, and even though I wrote it, it's still new to me, and I'm like, whoa, I wrote this, and, you know, people's pronouns have changed. I messed up Eileen's pronouns now, they, in the book it's she. I even messed it up when I was trying to correct it, you know, like, I had to change someone's name in the book that I was reading out loud, because they've transitioned since the book came out, so it's alive in ways that kind of pop out at me, and I have to kind of be on my toes. I don't know if that answers your question.
Yeah.
You had questions?
I didn't know any of that stuff.
Great.
And you also mentioned like the kind of like labels and stuff, like being restrictive as like a queer poet, and how do you like feel about those labels?
Yeah, well, I have a lot of feelings, and I think I spent about 300 pages on them. And I think, you know, I think using labels, it really depends on the situation. Like, sometimes it's highly, it's a mode of survival, and it's an imperative, and you have to be really, like, you know, boom. And other times it's, yeah, it can feel like it's somebody trying to put you, like it's a power play. So I think it depends on like if you're using them and how you feel. Like, it's very personal, and it very much depends on the situation. And so I think it's sort of like, think about things closely and not like blanket like everything. So that's sort of where I stand after being in a dizzying sort of tumble about it for many years, about the queer specifically. I mean, queer is problematic because if you use it, then it's like, what about all these other points of identification, race, gender, class, ability, you know, and the list goes on. So I think that that was sort of where the problem began. And a lot of the ideas in the book also, I think Simone has hosted these forums, that's the word that you're using, that are sort of about like what is happening in the moment in sort of whatever's being published or talked about in poetry, and made public space for them. And I've written about the certain things, like drafts of nuggets from the book where I read out loud at these forums at the project. Simone invited me to be a part of these panels where I try to parse, thinking specifically about race, being white and queer, and thinking about queer POC spaces and what does it mean to be navigating being inside those communities, but also at a distance, respectful to them, to separatist spaces. So a lot of, within studying queer culture and history, there's a lot of separatism that has happened, right, as modes of self-preservation. And so that's also really interesting to think about in the context of an event space and an institution that is not labeled, right? So there's this like bizarre thing with the Poetry Project that like we clearly have, you know, missions to, as you've said, like turn the ship around, because there's a lot of like sort of like white male patriarchy within our 50-year history. So it's like, as people attached to the institution that is the Poetry Project, it's like a genre-based label, not an identity-based label. Like, how do we reckon with the histories and our current visions, I think is interesting.
I agree with all that.
I hope that answers your question. Yeah, it's like the unanswerable question. It depends.
Did you see that? That was incredible.
This question's for Simone. You mentioned Nathaniel Mackey and music, and so this is a very general question. I wondered how music, I guess it's kind of a conventional question, how music's played a role in what you, maybe the second project that you're working on, how it's sculpted.
Yeah. Are you guessing? Well, I mean, the project is almost entirely obsessed with the question of how Black music figures into thinking about Black creativity, and specifically a poetics that is experimental, coming out of the work of Amiri Baraka, and in particular, and also thinking a lot about Nathaniel Mackey's work and the centrality of music in that work, both the poetry, which actually is not an object of study for me, but the novels. And so my own, you know, I'm personally obsessed with trap music. Like, I'm incredibly interested in its popularity. I mean, I have come to listen to it almost exclusively, which is not so, I mean, I've always been I'm 44, so it's age appropriate for me to have been like a lifelong fan of hip hop. But it wasn't something that was, I was not critically interested in the way that I became interested in it when I tried to sort of begin to think about the problem of how it might be the case that we could dismantle or deconstruct what I thought was a powerful hold that the idea of improvisation or experimentalism as it exists in particularly jazz and particularly in the figure of a few important musicians has come to sort of control thinking about the possibilities for Black freedom and expression. And I started thinking about how it was that trap music in particular seems to represent a definitive end for the possibilities of thinking in this way, because it seemed to me to represent like a complete convergence of all kinds of really dangerous and crazy notions about life, not Black life, all life, right? That are not radical or oppositional, or and do not represent in any way an oppositional discourse, but keeping in mind that not all discourse has to be oppositional. That's not a requirement of Black people. And so I've just become, it's been very, very difficult to separate from this discourse, in part because I love the music so much. And so I'm arguing with the importance of the music in a sort of long history of trying to do aesthetic theory about Black art. And also, and at the same time, like having a powerful love of it. And so it's been very, very, it's been a really challenging project.
This is to both of you, but if you had only one piece of advice to give to someone looking to like cultivate a community of writers, what would it be?
That's a great question.
Yeah,
I love that.
Yeah.
You want me to go first?
Yeah.
Okay.
I sort of thought I knew what you were going to say. I'm curious.
Oh. Yeah, I mean, I think that someone who's came up on this trip, right, like I also got an MFA. I went to Mills, right? And I, so there's that, right? There's the private MFA. And I remember, and it's an artificial community, in a sense, the MFA is. And I remember, like, being, and of course I met amazing writers, and I am currently, like, you know, staying with one of my professors who I had there, and I remember a piece of advice that Juliana Spahr actually gave to young writers then, and she even had like a pie chart to answer this question. Maybe it was another question, but it was sort of like, go to readings, like read your friend's work, figure out what labor in poetry communities you're going to do. So like, I think that one of the motivations for writing my book was actually, without me consciously knowing it, was to build a community. And so that involved all these multifaceted things that I didn't know I was doing because I was just like living. And then it became this sort of thing that I was documenting as I went along. But I like organizing readings. I have liked it. I'm tired because I've been doing it pretty heavily for the past 5 years, and I want to do something different, like art criticism or something, or more literary criticism. But I think figuring out what you love, like some people really love to like run that bone folder over a piece of cardstock and publish somebody's writing that they may or may not know. And there's all these avenues of actual labor that poetry needs in order to persist and survive and resist and be oppositional or not be oppositional. All those things. So I think that public programming is one thing, writing introductions is one thing, like giving somebody a reading who has never had a reading before could like change their life and the course of their image of themselves. It could change, it could create a book, it could create, like, so there's, it, that feels really amazing to be a part of that side of things, but public events are just one minuscule thing. It's just sort of been where I've landed. So yeah, I think like reading voraciously is another piece of advice, and trying to connect with people, and it's so much easier to do that now because of the internet, although the internet's deceptive, right, at the same time. So I feel like I'm entering the late night delirium moment, but there's so many other things to do, but I think that's would be think about where to start in terms of what skills you have or what makes you happy. And it may not be visible. I think a lot of the work that poets do is not visible, and I think you need to be at peace with that also in some ways. And also be happy if it is for a small audience, you know? Like creating mm-hmm. events for you and your friends or other writers that you know could be really powerful in the long scheme of things. Yeah.
I mean, everybody goes about doing this in a different way. One of the reasons that I was sort of sure that I knew what Ari was going to say was that...
Did I say what you thought?
No.
Oh.
So, surprise. So we've had this conversation before, and I think, you know, my understanding was that you sort of consciously created a community by trying, right? You thought about it and you said, how can I enter into this community? And you started going to readings and, mm-hmm. you know, like all the time, like start,
yeah.
like from the ground up kind of. And you were like,
yeah.
I'm going to build a writing community or be part of one or figure out what that is or something. I never had that conversation with myself. It was a little bit of a backwards thing for me. So there was a way in which I came with all these weird skills. Like, I came to poetry with all these weird administrative skills because I had practiced law and I was old. Or relatively old. I was not an intern at the Poetry Project, right? I mean, there are people who work at the Poetry Project who have been around the project since they were interns, since they were undergraduates, and, you know, who are now on the full-time staff of the project 12 years later or something like that. That was not my experience. I probably didn't go to a poetry meeting like the ones that we have until I was fully 33 years old. I mean, there was nothing to recommend the Poetry Project to me for a lot of reasons, and one of the reasons was that I thought of it as a primarily white institution. But when it became clear that it was, for important reasons, my poetic home, and that became clear fairly soon in my writing life. One of the things that happens is that, you know, people realize you can do stuff, and they ask you to do stuff. Like, sometimes it's like, oh, this person can type. Or sometimes it's like, this person is really, really good at identifying the brand, the newest book that's coming. I mean, I feel like that's Judah's role in some ways at the project. Judah, who's a Monday night coordinator,
yeah.
The curator of the Monday night series, which is the emerging writers series. Judah reads everything that comes out. And he does that with intense seriousness. And at some point, you know, the poetry world is actually really quite small, even though sometimes it feels really big and confusing and like, how do you know it exists and stuff. It's actually a very small number of people who can actually communicate with each other kind of to the person. It's not 50,000 people actually, for the
yeah.
most part, who run organizations and reading series around the country. It's a very small number of people. So at some point it becomes clear that this person who's hanging out at every reading at the Poetry Project actually has read every book that came out in the last 5 years. Right? And so that person's going to get tapped to do something. And it's just partly, it's like, there's no money in this job. I mean, we get paid, and I actually have a job. But this is not a job
no.
for Ariel.
No.
And so there's this very, very complex relationship between like volunteerism and jobs, right?
Yeah.
That exists in poetry. And part of the community aspect of it is figuring out that balance, I think, for yourself. How much of it, how do you make a life doing something in which there's no pay, right? Or for which there's very little pay. And for me, that's been a lot of figuring out community. It's been like, well, I'm a mother of a small child who, I also am kind of a single mom. I mean, I have a co-parent, but I'm kind of the single mom. So this is not a bohemian ideal for me. You know, there's no...
It's high stakes.
It's high stakes.
Yeah.
And there's not, you know, so I would love it if I could have a dinner party every Thursday night for all my favorite poetry people. I cannot do that. So how do I get into community with those people? Well, it's my job. That's how. Like, I actually get paid to show up every night. And in some ways, that's the only way I could do it. So I had to find a way to get a job in poetry. And for me, that also meant getting a PhD. It meant teaching. And it took a long time to reach that decision. But that I knew that in order to have poetic community, in order to study, in order to read poetry, in order to write it, I was going to have to work as primarily a culture worker and a teacher.
Thank you all.